It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Glad to be with you this Monday. I'm not Sandy Rios, but I'm sitting in for her. My name is Walker Wildman here at American Family Radio. Glad to be with you this Monday, February 25th. Sandy Rios is traveling, and she'll be back on the airwaves this upcoming Wednesday, so I'll be with you today and tomorrow. Once again, my name is Walker Wildman, and you frequently hear my voice on today's issues here on American Family Radio. And then I also host Exposing Washington each Saturday afternoon on American Family Radio. Great to be with you. A lot of news to cover, some good news to cover. So we're going to go through it all. Got a lot of things to talk about. We're going to talk about Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and President Trump and their trip to Vietnam to meet with Kim Jong-un. We're going to talk about this whole Jussie Smollett hoax that happened it played out over the last few weeks, but it really came to a tipping point last week when it came out that the actor, Jussie Smollett, faked a hate crime against himself. He faked a hate crime against himself. We're going to talk a little bit about that and how the left just can't come to settle with the fact that Jussie Smollett should go to jail for faking a crime and filing false police reports. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about how these lifelong Republican swamp rats in Washington, D.C. want President Trump out of the White House via the 25th Amendment. And so we're going to talk about that. We have some former Bush officials who are talking about how President Trump's got to go, and the one way we got to do it is using the 25th Amendment. We're also going to talk about, you know, there's a slew of Democrats running for the White House in 2020. They've already started campaigning. I think we're up to 10 or 12, at least, Democrats running for the White House. I mean, this is going to be interesting. You know, Republicans had a loaded baseball field. They had the baseball field and the dugout full in 2016 and 2015, you know. So it's not a negative thing to have a lot of candidates. I think it's actually a pretty good thing. But what's going to be funny and interesting about this is to see just how far left these Democrats can go, just how far socialist these Democrats can go. And it raises the question, how much longer are we going to call them Democrats? You know, Bernie Sanders is a self-admitted socialist, so is some of the other Democrats. So that's a good question to talk about. How much longer do we call them Democrats when they're not Democrats? They're socialists. So we'll talk about that. And lastly, you know, there's this Democrat out of New York. You've heard his name. Representative Jerry Nadler out of New York, congressman. And he said, President Trump is the greatest threat since the Civil War. So we'll talk about that a little bit. So a lot of things going on in the news today. Glad to have you with us. If you want to listen to the show, you can go to our website, afr.net. Of course, the primary way to listen is through our radio stations across the country, 182 radio stations in 32 states across the country. That's the best way to listen. But if you, for some reason, get out of our station coverage, you can go to our website, afr.net, and listen. Or you can visit Sandy Rios' Facebook page, Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook, and keep up with the show there. All the news stories that Sandy talks about and that I talk about today, some of those will be posted on the Facebook page for you to follow up on. So the first thing I want to talk about is this summit that President Trump is having with North Korea this week. I believe Wednesday and Thursday it is. You know, this is President Trump has, this is historic. And it's not historic just because they're meeting. That doesn't make history necessarily. I mean, it's a big step in the right direction. But the fact that Kim Jong-un hasn't fired any missiles in over a year now, when he was firing missiles like every other week, sometimes like twice a week, he was firing them like over Japan. And I mean, we were on the brink of war. We had military aircraft carriers over there. We had huge ships. We had submarines over there. We had thousands of Marines on the border. So we were at a tipping point. Kim Jong-un was a loose cannon, to say it nicely. And President Trump used a maximum pressure campaign to stop that. And the difference here is, and here's what some of the media say. Some in the media are claiming that President Trump's being too nice to Kim Jong-un. He's using too nice of language with this foreign dictator. President Trump needs to get tough. This is what the media is saying. And they've been saying this since President Trump got into office when it comes to foreign policy. But here's the difference between President Trump and former administrations. President Obama, guess what his foreign policy go-to was? It was to send $400 million in cash in the middle of the night to Iran. And then a couple of days later, they wire $1.3 billion to Iran. That was Obama's foreign policy. We pay off our enemies. We pay the ransom to our enemies. And so I don't want to hear anyone talk about how President Trump is not being tough enough. He's been the toughest president when it comes to foreign policy in decades, probably since Reagan. And some would argue he's even tougher than Reagan on some of these issues. And so President Trump has been the toughest when it comes to foreign policy and standing up for American values. But here's another difference. And this is what the establishment elites don't like. President Trump is not trigger happy. President Trump is not wanting to fight endless wars in foreign countries. That's the difference between President Trump and past administrations. And some try to act like us going to us America fighting endless wars is somehow, you know, honorable and tough, and it's a sign of nobility. That's not always the case. I think President Trump realizes that. So President Trump is manhandling foreign policy. And that's not a politically correct statement, but President Trump is manhandling foreign policy throughout the world, and he's doing it without having to pay ransom, and he's not having to send our men and women overseas to fight somebody else's war. So a lot of good things going on there. So we'll keep an eye on that. But I want to play clip one here. This is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who has been an excellent pick for the State Department, excellent spokesperson for our country. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo talking about what he expects to come out of this meeting this week. Clip one, let's listen.
Is that still President Trump's position going into this summit, complete denuclearization and no U.S. concessions before then?
There's been no change in U.S. policy since the time I've been Secretary of State, and frankly, even before that when I was CIA director. Our objectives are clear. Our mission is clear. President Trump's also said this is going to take time. There may have to be another summit. We may not get everything done this week. We hope we'll make a substantial step along the way. I've spent a lot of time with Chairman Kim. My team is on the ground today continuing to flesh out paths forward, to develop a roadmap for a path forward between the two countries. We're determined to achieve that. It's important for the world's security. The UN Security Council has demanded, not the United States, but the UN Security Council has demanded that Chairman Kim give up these weapon systems. It's in the best interest of the people of his country, and I hope we can make a real substantive step forward this week. It may not happen, but I hope that it will.
Well, there you have it. That's Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and what he projects to come out of the meeting this week. And I think what he said clearly there is, you know, we're heading towards complete denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula, but this is going to take a little time. This is going to take a little time. But you notice the questioning there, and I should have included Chris Wallace from Fox News. I should have included his question there to provide proper context. But there he says, and I listened to it last night, he started out with, you know, is the president disappointed that this isn't moving along faster? And that this is how you can tell a left-wing journalist or so-called journalist, these constant agitators of President Trump, this is how you can tell who they are. Their first question is basically a defeatist question. It's setting the stage that President Trump is failing on foreign policy. Is failing on foreign policy. Instead, I think the question should be to Secretary of State Pompeo, Secretary of State, are you surprised at how successful President Trump has been when it comes to foreign policy and getting these countries to get in line? That should be the question. But instead, we got to start out with a, you know, are you disappointed about how bad this is going and how bad that is going? But I want to move on. You know, along the same lines of this meeting in Vietnam this week, it also was reported last week that CNN reported that the Robert Mueller investigation report was going to be sent over to the Department of Justice this week. That was the report. And I found it, and now there's reports to the contrary that it's not going to be sent over this week. So who knows who to believe? CNN, I guess, got it completely wrong, or their sources were completely wrong. But does anyone else find it interesting that every time President Trump is going to negotiate on behalf of our country with these huge foreign players, these huge world players, that Robert Mueller releases some kind of major report? That's what happened last time. Last time President Trump went to meet with Vladimir Putin in Helsinki, what does Robert Mueller do? Robert Mueller releases an indictment. Robert Mueller releases an indictment. I believe it was on Paul Manafort. And so every time President Trump tries to go and negotiate on behalf of our country, Robert Mueller is constantly undermining him in the public eye. And I don't find that coincidental. I think that's very intentional. I think that's very intentional here. And so we'll see where that goes. We'll see when Robert Mueller's going to wrap this thing up. But I've said multiple times, I don't think this thing's ever going to end. I mean, I think Robert Mueller's going to keep this investigation going until the middle of this century. Why would he stop? Why would he stop? I don't think there's any reason for him to stop. So anyways, disputing reports about when Robert Mueller is going to wrap this thing up. But along the same lines of what Robert Mueller is trying to do, you know, Robert Mueller is acting on behalf of the Clintons. Robert Mueller is acting on behalf of the Obamas and trying to play revenge politics using our Justice Department. And other people who are trying to do this, I want to play clip four here. This is a former Bush. We don't have time. Sorry, that's what happens when you don't keep up with the clock. Appreciate that, Adam. We're going to go to a break. When we get back, I'm going to play a clip of a former Bush ethics official who talks about how we've got to use the 25th Amendment to get President Trump out of office. And we're going to talk about the ludicrousy that is. And more when we come back on Sandy Rios in the Morning. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in about 2 or 3 minutes.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE, 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray. A moment each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Kellyanne Conway, counselor to President Trump. As the president's former campaign manager, Ms. Conway is the first woman to have run a successful U.S. presidential campaign. Proverbs 12:15 reminds us of the importance of wise counsel. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to bless Kellyanne Conway with wisdom as she advises the president. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. Volume 2 of our daily prayer journal is now available. To receive your copy, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Conservatives are under attack on university campuses. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A conservative activist was brutally attacked at the University of California, Berkeley, and a portion of the incident was captured on video. The victim, identified by Turning Point USA as Hayden Williams, was helping to recruit members. Two thugs approached, knocked over a table, then one of the guys started punching Mr. Williams in the face. What led up to the attack is not clear. That part was not videotaped. Campus police are investigating, and university leaders have denounced the violence. But the mainstream media has taken a pass on the story. Lots of folks are wondering why. I suspect it's because the guy who got sucker punched is a conservative. And let's be honest, had the attacker been wearing a Make America Great Again ball cap, every news organization in the country would have descended on Berkeley. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Walker Wildman here sitting in for Sandy Rios this morning. Glad to have you with me this Monday morning. AFR.net is our website. AFR.net is our website. You can go there and listen. Also, you can catch past shows there. We'll have this show, for example, we'll have this show up in a little bit, in a couple hours. We'll have this show up on our website, afr.net. So if you didn't catch the entire show, you can go back and listen there. And you can catch last week's shows and so on and so forth. But before the break, you know, I wasn't paying attention to the clock, so I tried to call for a one-minute clip when we had about a minute left in the show. So we're going to try this again. This is clip four. This is a former Bush ethics official. His name's Richard Painter. I believe he's a professor now at the University of Minnesota. We're going to play this clip, but here's what he's talking about, folks. He's on Fox News, on Tucker Carlson's show, and he's talking about how the cabinet, the U.S. cabinet officials, how they should use the 25th Amendment to basically run President Trump out of office. Clip four, let's listen.
I've talked about the 25th Amendment
a number of times with respect to this president. It was put into the Constitution late 1960s to address a situation in which the president is physically or mentally incapacitated, unable to carry out his duties in office.
We're not law professors like you, but we know what it is. How would you affect it? How would you do it? Presumably the president wouldn't concede to being overthrown. So would you rush into his office? Would you rouse him from bed? Like, how would you do this?
No, this isn't the, you don't overthrow the president. None of the, this is not about overthrowing the president. Okay. There are thousands of psychiatrists who have voiced extreme concern about President Trump's mental state.
I get it. You get some compliance shrinks to agree he shouldn't be president. I'm sure you could probably get 99% of them to say that. I would not be surprised.
Under the 25th
Amendment,
what
do you do?
The cabinet, the majority of the cabinet, and the vice president could temporarily remove the president from office.
All right, well, there you have it. First off, I thought I had a southern accent. I thought I had a southern accent, but that fella right there had me beat by a long shot. And, you know, what he's talking about there, first off, this is a former Bush official, and he's now a professor, but he's been advocating for the 25th Amendment. And just to put this in context, folks, the 25th Amendment is rarely talked about because it's never been used. Why has it never been used? Because it's never needed to be used. And it's not needed in 2019. But the 25th Amendment is for the case where a president is mentally unable to carry out duties of his office in a responsible manner. And so I don't know, you know, what kind of diagnosis would come along with that, but I can tell you one thing. It's not meant to be used because you just don't like the president. Because you just don't like the president. We have something called impeachment for if you just don't like the president and you think he's doing illegal things. And there's a reason we have this system set up. There's a reason we have a constitution. There's a reason we have a justice system. It's so people don't overtake the White House. And that's what this fella's talking about. I mean, he can nuance it however he wants, but he's talking about a coup. He's talking about overthrowing the government. That's what this fella Richard Panner's talking about. And there is no legitimacy in claiming the 25th Amendment. There is no legitimacy in that. And he goes on and talks about, I mean, this is absolutely embarrassing. I don't know how these folks get doctorates. I mean, I'm not gonna call them bad names on the radio, but they're just not smart. They're not smart, and nobody ever asked them tough questions. But this fella said, this Richard Panner on that clip just said, thousands of psychiatrists have ruled that President Trump is unfit for office. Okay, first off, since when have psychiatrists been able to diagnose remotely? That's unheard of. Issuing an official diagnosis from 1,000 miles away. Now, you want to let me know how that works? I can't even get a doctor's opinion over the phone. I have to go up there and see him. So this whole idea of diagnosing from afar is ludicrous. It's laughable. And I don't know what psychiatrist would go on the record and diagnose President Trump from afar. I mean, that's one of the basic roles of medicine is you gotta see the patient face to face. You gotta take their heart rate, take their blood pressure, run tests to figure out what's wrong with the patient. But this whole idea that we can say from 1,000 miles away, well, President Trump's unfit for office, even though we don't spend any time with him. That's the first thing. The second thing is, this is, you know, we have the whole FBI, Department of Justice, Russia hoax into President Trump, and then you have this whole 25th Amendment push. Folks, this is a coup attempt. They are attempting a coup as we speak, and they've been attempting it the last 2 years because this whole 25th Amendment thing is intended for a very rare circumstance where a sitting president mentally cannot carry out his duties of office. And we are not there. We are not even close to there. And here's what the folks don't like. Here's what the elites in Washington don't like. They don't like that President Trump is unpredictable and not controlled by lobbyists and special interests. That's what they don't like. They don't like that President Trump is not controlled by lobbyists, special interests, and big donors. And so, in their opinion, if he's not controlled, if he's not a puppet, if he's not a robot to the swamp in D.C., then he's unfit for office. He's unfit for office. He doesn't make decisions that we like. He doesn't do things that we like. He's disrespectful to the media. And all those things may be valid. I mean, I can't say that President Trump's respectful to the media, but guess who started this fight? The media. They started this fight. But just because we don't like a president doesn't mean that he's eligible for impeachment. Doesn't mean that he's eligible for impeachment. And I would arguably say, with the exception of a re-election campaign where you can unseat a president, there is no legitimate argument to remove a sitting president simply because you do not like him. Even if it's like a socialist and they're making horrible decisions for our country. Unless you can remove them at the ballot box, or unless they've committed high crimes and misdemeanors and they're eligible for impeachment, we can't just go to ousting president just because we don't like him. Because that's what happens in like Venezuela. That's what happens in banana republics. That's what happens in foreign countries, is you have military coups. We saw that in Turkey a couple years ago. So we are a representative democracy. We're a constitutional republic, and we have elections. And if you don't like who's in the White House, guess what you do? You vote them out of the White House next election. That's what happened. Well, that's not what happened with President Obama, but that's basically what happened, because Hillary Clinton was going to be a third term for Obama. And so, but America spoke up. They didn't like Obama and the Democrat policies, and thus Donald Trump is in the White House. And if you don't like it, you got a chance to reverse that here in about a year and a half during the 2020 election cycle. I want to move on to one more topic before the next segment, and that is this whole idea of that you hear from the media that hate crimes are on the rise. That's what you hear over and over and over again. In the era of Donald Trump, hate crimes are on the rise. The KKK is making a comeback. That's what you hear over and over again. But you look around in your community and you're like, so where are the hate crimes again? Because you don't see them. Very rarely do you see a hate crime reported on the local news. That's because it's not happening actually that much. And I want to play clip, first off, before we jump into this, I'm going to play clip two here. This is, to put this in context, we're talking about, the context is this whole Jussie Smollett, the ABC actor, and how he staged a fake crime against himself to make himself look like the victim. And this is a guest on MSNBC, and he just can't come to grips that Jussie Smollett just absolutely lied and framed this whole thing. And who do we blame? Oh, let's blame the police. This is a clip two. Let's listen.
This police department did in 2016 openly through their union support Donald Trump. And a lot of this case has been focused on the MAGA statements. So to have a police department that hasn't been as cooperative as they have been this round, do not openly give information, do openly lie and mishold information in cases, and then to know that they are openly supported Donald Trump in the 2016 election, a lot of activists on the ground are saying, wait, what's going on here? Who do we believe out of these two suspect people?
Folks, this is unbelievable. So we have this Jussie Smollett, if that's how you pronounce his name, I have no idea. But you have this Jussie Smollett, the Empire actor from ABC, who staged his own crime against himself. And listen to this, folks. He wrote a check. He wrote a check to pay for the crime. He wrote a check to pay for the crime. And he texts the alleged assailants, he texts them before and after, thanking them for participating. I mean, this is absolutely unbelievable, and it makes you question the mental capacity. Talk about the 25th Amendment. This, you talk about questioning the mental capacity. Let's talk about this. Why you would write If you're going to stage your own crime, let's write a check. The most traceable form of documentation is a check. It gets scanned in the bank. It's on record for eternity. But let's write a check to pay for the fake hate crime. That's what Jussie Smollett did. And, you know, anyway, so that's a whole different subject about the stupidity that this fella carried out to have this crime committed. But back to that, what we just heard there, that was a guest, and you know, that's what they're doing. They realize that the media fell into this hoax, and they don't know what to do now. They don't know what to do because they don't want to criticize Jussie Smollett because, oh, we can't criticize him. We can't criticize him. So what do? We blame other people. Let's just blame Trump. Let's blame the Chicago Police Department. Let's don't take responsibility for this fella's actions. And that leads us into this point. Another excuse you're going to hear from the media, you have this one excuse, and that is, well, the police department's unfair. The Chicago Police Department's known for withholding information. And then you have another excuse. Oh, it's President Trump's fault. It's President Trump's fault. And then the third excuse you hear is, well, this case might not be true, but there are hate crimes going on in our country. This case might be a hoax, but trust me, there are hate crimes out there. Many of them go unreported. And so how do we form a factual, knowledgeable, intelligent discussion based on stuff that's unreported? Based on stuff that's unreported. And the one thing that is reported is this. Here's the deceptive headline from the fake news media that President Trump calls the enemy of the people. Here's the headline. FBI report shows 17% spike in hate crimes in 2017. Two years ago, 2017, all the media outlets for that sake, say hate crimes are on the rise in Donald Trump's presidency. Well, guess what's about 10 paragraphs down? And 1,000 additional police agencies reported information in 2017 compared with previous years. Well, that's huge. That is huge. And you put that 10 paragraphs down at the bottom. You know why they didn't want to put that at the top? Because it would completely undermine the narrative that hate crimes are on the rise. Can you imagine running like scientific surveys and in one survey you have 1,000 people surveyed and they run the same survey again except for they add 1,000 more respondents, but they report it as if we've got a rise in this response? Well, because you added 1,000 people to the survey. And so that's what's happening with this whole hate crimes hoax. They say hate crimes are on the rise. That's because 1,000 additional police departments began importing information into this FBI database in 2017. Well, that just might explain the rise, my friends. That just might explain the rise that's going on in the alleged hate crimes. But, you know, in reality, folks, I think our country's probably in better shape than it's been in historically when it comes to hate crimes and racism and discrimination. One thing I'm disappointed at is that we're still killing babies. Our country's never going to be in good shape, so to speak, until we stop killing babies, until we stop murdering innocent babies, and that's what the Democrats are for. But when it comes to these hate crimes and racism and discrimination, I actually think our country's doing pretty darn good. I actually think our country's doing pretty good, but the Democrats thrive off of fear. And how do the Democrats invoke fear across the country? They make up fake hate crimes. That's how you do it, folks. That's how you do it. You make up fake hate crimes. You say President Trump's a racist. Our country's burning. There's racism everywhere. The KKK is on the rise. That's how you stir up identity politics. That's how you stir up folks' emotions. That's what the Democrats are doing here because they have no legitimate issues to campaign on other than fear and intimidation. Sandy Rios in the morning. We'll be back in a few minutes with your calls.
for nothing is hidden that will not be made manifest. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Empire star Jussie Smollett was arrested and charged with disorderly conduct and falsifying a police report. This followed his initial report that he was the victim of a horrific attack where the assailants yelled, "This is MAGA country." Police have learned that Smollett orchestrated the attack with two men he knew personally and whom he paid with a check. Unsurprisingly, the media ran with the initial report, seemingly because it painted Trump supporters in a negative light. The Trump presidency has revealed, for all the nation to see, that journalistic standards are a thing of the past.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
To sharpen the biblical worldview of Christians, and to share the good news of Jesus Christ. That is the mission of the Christian Worldview Radio program. I'm host David Wheaton, inviting you to join us this Saturday morning at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, as we discuss all matters of life and faith from a decidedly biblical perspective. The Christian Worldview, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, right here on American Family Radio.
When you open your Bible, you'll see two main sections, the Old Testament and the New Testament. But this week on Truth for Life, Alistair Begg reminds us that both parts of the Bible are one big story, the story of God's kingdom. Listen Monday through Friday to Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at afr.net.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. 4 years ago, Hoda Mathana left the United States for Syria to support ISIS as it fought against her own country. Online, she called for people to spill American blood. Now she regrets her decision and wants to come back to America. The answer should be a flat no. She claims to be a U.S. citizen by birth, but according to a correct reading of the 14th Amendment, she's not. Her parents were citizens of another country when she was born, meaning that she, as well as her parents, to use the language of the amendment, quote, were not subject to the jurisdiction, end quote, of the United States. It's not enough just to be born here. Birthright citizenship is reserved for those who were born here as children of American citizens. Let's hope the law soon catches up to the Constitution.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The latest indication that Communist China is preparing for conflict, presumably with us, is Beijing's recent announcement of an overhaul of its national security education programs. It's an ominous asymmetry that scarcely any American civilians have received training about the common defense in two generations. Many U.S. campuses have actually subjected students to courses, professors, and programs sponsored by Chinese influence operations known as Confucius Institutes. Think such indoctrination doesn't matter? Consider the case of Monica Witt, an Air Force counterintelligence officer who had been exposed at George Washington University to similar operations mounted by Sharia supremacists. She went on to betray her country to Iran. We can't afford to continue learning the truth about our enemies the hard way, a fact President Trump must consider as he contemplates a trade deal that may obscure but won't mitigate the growing, multifaceted Chinese threat. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Great to be with you. Walker Wildman here sitting in for Sandy Rios this morning. I'm going to give out the number. We'll be glad to hear your comments. Let's keep it on the topics discussed on the show today. We talked about President Trump and his meeting with Kim Jong-un. We talked about the outrage that the Democrats and the left wing are showing when it comes to trying to oust President Trump using the 25th Amendment and whatever other means they can conjure up. And the last thing we talked about is these fake hate crimes and how these FBI statistics are absolutely skewed. Because so many other police departments are reporting this information, there is a natural rise in, quote, hate crimes, which I disagree with that whole label to begin with. I'll talk about that here in a minute. But the reason there's a rise in these in this FBI database is because 1,000 extra police departments are reporting into the database. And but the media is not going to talk about that because that goes against their narrative. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840 is the number to call in. We'll be glad to take your comments. 888-589-8840 is the number to call in. We'll be glad to take your comments and your questions. You know, back to this whole hate crimes deal. You know, I can understand, and people are going to disagree with me on this, even probably some conservatives, but I can understand in the days of Jim Crow laws, in the days of heightened racism, and, you know, maybe some anti-Semitism, I can see how the whole idea of, quote, hate crimes could come about. Some could say, well, they need to be punished more than others because I don't know what the argument would be. I'm sure there's some probably legitimate arguments out there for this whole idea of hate crimes. But in the era, in the days of 2019, where we have civil rights for everybody, for every American, equal opportunity for every American, I'm not sure that we need to be prioritizing one crime over the other. And let's just draw an analogy for you, all right? Let's say, I'll just take me for example. Let's say I'm robbed at gunpoint, getting into my vehicle, all right? I'm robbed at gunpoint, getting into my vehicle, and I'm a white male. Then let's say my friend, whose skin color is a little bit darker than mine, is getting into his vehicle, and he gets robbed at gunpoint. Should the crime committed against him be a higher priority for the police department, for the prosecutor, in the law? No, it should be the same. We're both Americans. We're both law-abiding citizens who have fallen victim to a crime. But this whole idea of hate crimes prioritizes other crimes above others when they're the same level of offense. And so that's the problem here. You know, we got this clause in the Constitution that talks about the equal application of the law. The equal application of the law, which means that we all live under the same rules. We're supposed to, at least. We all live under the same rules, unless you're Hillary Clinton. But the whole idea of equal application of the laws means that everybody is treated the same when it comes to the law. We all have to answer to the law. And so I think we need to take a look at this whole idea of hate crimes and how it prioritizes other crimes above. It prioritizes some crimes over others, and as if some crimes are more important than others when they're not. They're all crimes should be a matter of importance. And so that's my opinion on that. And it really furthers a divide in our country. It really furthers a divide in our country because it allows the media to go out there and go, hate crimes are on the rise. Racism is on the rise. And that's just factually not true. That's just factually not true. So I think in 2019, it's time to revisit this whole idea of hate crimes. We're going to go to the phones, and we're going to take Marie's call from Kansas. Marie, welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Well, thank you. That gentleman that I just talked to sounded so much like you. I thought it was you. I'm going, why did he answer the phone?
No, that's Jonathan.
I really liked being on the radio.
That's Jonathan, but I'll take that as a compliment. Okay. I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Marie. What's on your mind?
You're talking about hate crimes and being on the rise. I listen to AFR all day, and I listen to some news on TV, not a lot anymore, but it seems to me that the hate crimes, if they are up, are the people that are against anybody wearing a MAGA hat, anybody they think that is for President Trump. And they are talking about, the narrative is hate crimes are going up, which is making the left hate the right even more.
Yeah.
Even more. And an example is the young men that were the college men, and I forget where it was, and the Indian came and beat the drum, and the other group was calling them all kinds of names. Did they get in trouble? Did anybody say anything? Not very many said anything negative about them, but it was all about the boys that stood there and did nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Marie. So good point there. Assaults against conservatives are on the rise. I think that's a pretty fair thing to say. Appreciate it, Maria. Thank you for calling in. You know, but she's exactly right there. This is the reality, and this is what the left does. They distract us from reality. The reality is that conservatives are being either verbally or sometimes physically assaulted at, it seems like, a pretty high rate. You know, and I'm not even far calling those hate crimes. Because I think they should be under the assault category. They should be under the assault category. Just like if a conservative gets assaulted at UC Berkeley, which actually happened last week, and a kid gets assaulted in downtown Chicago, I think those should both be assaults. They should both be handled equally under the law. We're going to go to, let's go to Lowry in Texas. Lowry, welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Hey, Lowry, can you turn your radio down for me, please? Hey, Lowry?
Yes, sir.
Hey.
How you doing, brother?
Hey, doing well. What's on your mind?
Just being blessed this morning. Listen, I don't think I have more than a comment. When I raised my son, I raised him on one thing. You point one finger, three are going back at you. And I think what's happened in our society is people are continually pointing fingers and don't realize they need to look at themselves. And my own comment is this. What happened to the last 8 years under Obama? Where was the hate crimes? Where was the issues on that? What was it? Was they increased, decreased? Nobody's pointing those out. I guess I want to leave that with you and for you to kind of discuss that for a little bit. How about that?
Sure. I appreciate that, Lowry. Thank you for listening. You know, you're right. I mean, the media only codgers up these statistics, and some of them are not even accurate statistics, but they only codger them up when it fits their narrative. You know, to your point, nobody's talking about hate crimes during Obama. You know, and the media was probably saying, oh, that, you know, the media would probably claim that hate crimes are down. Hate crimes are down under President Obama. You know, he's bringing peace to our country, you know, but the media doesn't want to bring up these different discussions unless it fits their narrative. And this whole idea of hate crimes fits their narrative right now because guess what? They blame it on President Trump. We're going to go to Sylvia in Texas. Sylvia, welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Hey, Sylvia, welcome to Sandy Rios. Are you there?
Oh, yes.
Hey, Sylvia, well, what's on your mind?
Well, your first caller kind of took what I was going to say. I don't know if they count, like, what happened at Berkeley. I don't know if they call that a hate crime, but it was a hate crime. So hate crimes against a lot of conservatives or people that indicate that they have voted for Donald Trump or they like Donald Trump, they're either hit or yelled at or threatened. So I don't know. And I think this started with Obama. I didn't hear about all of this until Obama when Eric Holder first came in, he said that he couldn't do anything against the blacks because they were his people. You remember when they tried to intimidate voters? And they had him in there, and then when Obama got in, they didn't do anything. So I don't know. I think that mainly there is hate crime, and it's you're right, it is assault, but they do hate.
Yeah.
They're hating these people. That's how they can be so violent against conservatives, because they don't like what they say or what they believe in.
Sure.
And that needs to stop.
Yeah, exactly right. Thank you, Sylvia. Sylvia from Texas there. 888-589-8840 is the number to call in. Share your thoughts. Share your comments. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. And, you know, I think, once again, people are going to disagree with me on this, but I don't really, it shouldn't matter what's in someone's heart when they commit the crime, all right? It shouldn't. I know intent has a lot to do with prosecutions when it comes to levels of punishment, but I don't really think it should matter what's in someone's heart when they commit the crime. If you rob the bank, you rob the bank. Whether you are happy in your heart or mad in your heart. If you assault somebody, I don't care whether your heart was happy or your heart was hateful towards the person because of whatever reason. You assaulted the person, you should be prosecuted based on the crimes you committed. And so, you know, this whole idea that we got to measure somebody's heart when we go to prosecuting them, that's questionable. And to prove my point, you know, I just looked up on the FBI website, hate crimes, and here's the first sentence. Here's the first sentence of on the FBI's website. Hate crimes are the highest priority of the FBI's civil rights program due to the devastating impact they have on families and communities. That's what the FBI says. Hate crimes are the highest priority. Well, you know what doesn't qualify as a hate crime? When illegal immigrants come into our country and kill our teenagers. Nope, that doesn't qualify as a hate crime. Guess what else doesn't qualify as a hate crime? The black-on-black crime in Chicago, where the gangs are killing off teenagers. Nope, that doesn't qualify as a hate crime. Oh, no, Jussie Smollett, yep, that qualifies as a hate crime. So that's the problem here. That's the problem here. What makes certain victimhoods more important than others? I think that's a debate we need to have. I'm going to go to Ken in Arkansas. Ken in Arkansas, welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Good morning, Walker. Thank you, brother. I agree with the vast majority of everything you've said this morning, with one major exception, and that is that the largest, most prevalent hate crime of all is not being reported as a hate crime, not even being reported as a crime, period. And that is the killing of blacks to carry out the mission of the KKK, only now we call it Planned Parenthood. The vast majority of abortion chambers are in black neighborhoods. I think it's 70-80%. And the vast majority of babies that are killed are black. And Planned Parenthood was founded by a woman who was a racist and a frequent speaker at KKK rallies with the desire to eliminate the undesirables from society, which...
All right. Sorry, Ken, I had to let you go, but you're spot on there. Margaret Sanger, she fundraised from the KKK to help start Planned Parenthood. That's historically accurate. Democrats are the party of racism. Sandy Rios in the Morning. We'll be back tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.